Chapter 20. You had not left behind any notes about what you wanted done at your funeral. This was not due to a surfeit of optimism, though you were determined that your end would not come at the end of Autus the First's sword or spear. It was because you found the idea of a funeral for you too pitiful. What would be said, and what would be done? What fitting epitaph for your fragile bones? Perhaps, "Here lies the world's most insufferable witch." In the following months, the Saint of Duty attempted to kill you, by your count, 14 times, and you never came to understand the motivation. Often, you were saved only by intervention. Sometimes this came from one of the other two lictors. Once, vilely, from Ianthe. She had ensconced you in fat and rolled you down the hallway out of danger, and still laughed whenever she thought about it. Once it even came from God. He had walked in as your pelvis was run through by your elder brother's razor-sharp, scarlet-hilted rapier, so sharp you could never comprehend it, and God had laid you down on the big, broad dining table of brown wood, and the world had whited out for you and reverberated up your nostrils and sinus cavities, then arced down the bottoms of your feet as your skin and flesh closed over whole and perfect. Even your backache had disappeared. Your body had hissed all over as it sealed, reborn in the hot white light of the Necrolord Prime. And he had said, "Autus, have pity." "This is my pity, Lord," said the Saint of Duty. "She's your responsibility, not your punching bag." "I find the responsibility a hard one."
You'd lain dazed and stunned on the tabletop, and you heard the Emperor of the Nine Houses say,
"I don't want to argue with you. This is ham-fisted. Get out."
If you had thought God's intervention might be final, might enforce some terms of peace, it had not. It had seemed difficult to raise the subject when God did not want to bring it up himself. What would you say?
"One of your fingers and gestures is trying to kill me on the reg. Is this fine with you?"
When you finally approached him about it, his wince made you wish that you had not. The Emperor said carefully,
"He made a pact with an authority I have no power to gainsay, that he would protect me from all dangers. Now it has been put to him that you are that danger. Harrowhark, forgive me. I need you to face him, each time, knowing your life is in danger."
Here he broke off and just said, "Will you wear a rapier if I give you one?"
"For what purpose, teacher? I cannot use it, having misapprehended the lictoral process."
"Just in case," he said,
and it was the first time you had seen him wretched.
"You say you misapprehended the process," said your teacher, leaning forward and crossing his shabby sleeved arms over his knees. "I don't believe you did, Harrowhark. I really don't believe you did. I've only seen one person get it fundamentally wrong, and I hope I never see what happened to Anastasia and Samael again."
And thus, unintentionally, you also confronted him with Anastasia. You could not trip in the Ninth House without falling over an Anastas, an Anastasia, or an Anastasius, or in later years, bumping into their niche. Anastasia had been the mythic founding tombkeeper and grandmother of the house, and the subject of at least two Nigenad poems.
"'Twas deep in Anastasia's time, I wot."
She was namesake of the deep inner monument where lay the sacred bones of tombkeepers past and those who fell in battle. You were profoundly upset to learn that she had been real, that the rooms you inhabited, the empty, tintless, quiet rooms, had been intended for her.
as you often sat, mute and still, a statue of yourself, opposite the Emperor of the Nine Resurrections, caught between pleasure and pain, listening to him speak. He did not wait for you to ask. He said, "Out of all of us, only Anastasia got it wrong. She'd researched it too much. Typical Anastasia. She'd seen some pathways in it that simply didn't exist. She spoke the eightfold word, and it didn't work. After we cleaned up, she asked me if I might end her life. Of course, I said no. She had so much more to give. Later, I would ask of her a greater and more terrible thing. I had a body, and I needed a tomb. You might know of the body, Harrowhark, and you will know far better the tomb." At the time, the body had stood at the curtained plex window that stared out onto the field of slowly spinning asteroids, the mother of pearl robe slipping from her supple, naked shoulders, still moist as though just taken from the ice of her grave. You watched a droplet of water trickle down the column of her spine. "The tomb that was to be shut forever," you said, and found the words so strange. "The rock that was never to be rolled away, that what was within should remain buried, insensate, with closed eye and stilled brain. Every day I prayed for it to live, I prayed for it to sleep." Your voice dredged up from your brain, which dredged up from your heart, which dredged up from the oily, filth-stricken depths of your soul, and you said, "God, who did you bury?" Teacher worried his temple with his thumb, and then worried his other temple with his other thumb. He took a biscuit and dipped it into his cooling tea, then ate it, then swirled the tea around in the cup and set it down again.
"I buried a monster," he said.
From the glare of the plex window, beside some perfectly ordinary white twill curtains, the buried monster turned herself so that she was lit in the light of the undead stars, the curve of her cheek, the thick black lashes that fringed her golden eyes, the thumbprint divot that lay pressed like a kiss within the bow of her lip. You had not known you were shaking until God himself reached out to still your wrist so that you mightn't spill your tea over your knees. He unhelpfully passed you another biscuit.
"Eat up. There's nothing to you," he said gently. "Have two. Get some fat reserves. Do you like poetry, Harrowhark?"
"I have never been a fan," you said fervently.
"Poetry is one of the most beautiful shadows a civilization can cast across time," he said. "Go on, eat up. They're good for you. Here, I'm going to pretend to read this one off my tablet, when in fact it's been with me for over 10,000 years. Here's my favourite part."
That night, the body consented to embrace you. You so nearly felt those long arms wrap around your neck, your middle. You were so close to feeling that press of graceful forehead to yours, the long, lean, dead body chilling yours to the shivering point, as you all but perceived one cool corpse thigh touching yours from hip to knee. You had been nearly 8 weeks in the Mithraeum. The sword that you bathed in your own arterial blood was sheathed in bone and heavy on your back. You no longer knew what it was like not to be afraid. You, with your unfortunate memory for poetry, could still hear teacher's verse in his low, soothing, ordinary voice chase itself round and round your head.
"For the moon never beams without bringing me dreams of the beautiful Annabel Lee."
"The Emperor of the Nine Houses, the Prince Undying. Wylam? John? Who was A.L.?"